Welcome to the Global from Asia podcast, where the daunting process of running an international business from Hong Kong is broken down into straight up actionable advice. And now, your host, Michael Michelini.
Staying warm. Seems like the whole world is frozen and it's record cold here in the south of China. We have reports of freezing rain in Hong Kong, and to make it even more memorable, we welcome to the world Maggie, my daughter, this past Sunday, January 24th. Definitely a little snow princess, keeping us all warm in our hearts. All right, enough for the soft stuff. Let's cut to the chase, dive right into the show, because I got to get back to the hospital and check up on Wendy and Maggie, so enjoy. So thank you, everybody, for tuning in to another Global from Asia podcast. We have with us a special treat and my friend for many years, Rosemary Coates. So thanks for being here, Rosemary.
Thank you. I appreciate the opportunity to talk with you today.
Sure. You have a lot of experience here, so I'll try to keep it short for everybody. You are the president of Blue Silk Consulting, and you're a seasoned executive with an MBA, 25 years experience in supply chain management, operations management, project management, and systems consulting. So I think we were talking a little bit before the call. You've done a lot with China and sourcing. And for the past few years, you've become kind of the expert and the go-to person for reshoring, which is what I think we want to focus on today. You also have a best-selling book, The 42 Rules of Sourcing and Manufacturing in China, which actually I was contributor in a little bit, quoted me a little bit. So I always appreciate that. And there's tons of other things I could say about you, but how'd I do, Rosemary?
Oh, you didn't. You did well. Yeah. So I spent probably 20 years or so assisting companies with offshoring, manufacturing, and sourcing, particularly in China. So I've been to China many times and I have helped a lot of companies in that regard expand their operations or whatever. And then a few years ago, we started taking a more strategic look at a global approach to sourcing and manufacturing. And at the same time, in parallel, was the beginning of the reshoring movement in the U.S. So combining those two things, we started heavily weighing the kind of work that we were doing on the reshoring side to help bring manufacturing back to America. And the most important reason is because during the 15 years or so that we were offshoring, we put a big hole in the middle class in America by shutting down most of the manufacturing operations here. So by reshoring or bringing manufacturing back, we're helping to rebuild the middle class and reestablishing what we would call advanced manufacturing in the U.S. We don't really want to bring back some of the high labor content or the lower level manufacturing, but the sophisticated manufacturing is really important for rebuilding our manufacturing base in the U.S.
Okay. Yeah, so I went through some of your white papers. You have a few there on your website, bluesilkconsulting.com. Just if anybody else wants to check them out, they're pretty great. So I was reading one of the white papers, and it was talking about Tim Cook and Apple, and he said that actually a lot of the consumer electronics manufacturing never really existed in the U.S., and maybe now they're just starting to build it. So that's also, you know, interesting. Maybe some of these manufacturing wasn't. I don't know if you remember that in one of those white papers, but
yeah,
that was pretty interesting.
Yeah, so actually, there's more information available at the Reshoring Institute. So I'm also the executive director of the Reshoring Institute, which is organized under the University of San Diego. And that website is reshoringinstitute.org. And there are lots of white papers and information you can download there. But so in the electronics industry, as you know, a lot of the electronics were shipped to Asia, various parts of Asia. I think Singapore was probably the first, and Taiwan, and then movement into China in the last 15 years. And as products were developed, then the parts and associated components were also manufactured in China. So they never, and Tim's right, I mean, they never really existed in the U.S. So now when we're talking about reshoring, and Apple is a very good example, because they were challenged by President Obama to bring some of their manufacturing back. And in fact, they did. But what they did was open a Foxconn, a contract manufacturing plant in Silicon Valley, and they have one in Texas also, where they are doing final assembly and tests of products. So it's sort of like manufacturing, and a lot of those components are actually coming from China. So everything is not made here. Still, though, it does represent bringing that final assembly or that part of the manufacturing back. So it's a pretty important step.
So you covered a little bit in the intro, but maybe we just define reshoring. That's basically bringing back manufacturing jobs that were moved overseas.
Yeah.
Is there like a more?
Yeah, no, that's right. It's bringing back, in our case, we're really focused on manufacturing, but we're also seeing a lot of repatriation of call centers, for example, and other services that had gone to overseas locations. So a lot of that is coming back now to the U.S. for a variety of reasons. You know, there's certainly IP concerns, there's latency in the supply chain. So the extended supply chains become unwieldy and difficult to deal with quality issues, that sort of thing. So there are a variety of reasons, but most importantly is because companies in the manufacturing sector are interested in manufacturing products for the local market in the local market. So, you know, what we're really seeing is an evolution. It's not just a matter of, you know, we took everything to China and we're bringing everything back. Really, it's a forward step, an evolutionary step, where companies are thinking through their global supply chain strategies and their global manufacturing strategies and deciding to manufacture in multiple locations. So, for example, when we're working with our clients that have locations in China, we mostly will encourage them to leave part of manufacturing there. And in fact, if they're manufacturing lower cost goods or manufacturing products for the Chinese market, to leave that part of the manufacturing there and to bring back to the U.S. the manufacturing of products that are going to be sold in the U.S. market, and the same for Europe. So bringing to Europe items that are going to be sold in the European market.
Got it. So like, would that be, you know, I guess there's components you got to buy, especially like electronics, and there's like the assembly and packaging, and would that be the whole product?
Well, it depends on what it is. So I'll give you a couple of examples. GE makes water heaters in China and refrigerators, other white goods, what you would call white goods. They're generally appliances, and then they're shipped around the world. Well, they came up with a new product called a GeoSpring water heater that heats water on demand. So most of our water heaters are tanks, you know, and they're heating water all day long, and it's really inefficient. So they innovated this new product, which is the GeoSpring water heater, that when you turn on the tap, the water heater works and it instantly produces hot water. But those water heaters are very expensive and really aimed at the affluent community in the U.S. and in Europe. So they brought back the manufacturer. They innovated that product and designed it, and then brought back the manufacturing, reopened a manufacturing site in Kentucky, and are manufacturing the GeoSprings there, because they're sold actually in this market mostly. And then they also opened up other sections of the plant, brought back wine coolers, wine refrigerators, which is, you know, a high-end product also for an affluent marketplace, high-end refrigerators. And so little by little, they're bringing back a selection of the product line that will be marketable in the U.S. market. And they left the preponderance of production of appliances in China. And obviously, China is a huge growth market for GE. So it's sort of a win-win for everyone. We get some of the manufacturing back. It's advanced manufacturing. It's advanced products. And yet China gets to keep a preponderance of the manufacturing there.
Okay, it makes sense. So then, yeah, like a lot of people we don't talk about it probably too much today, but, you know, yeah, like you mentioned, the middle class in China's been increasing and they've been buying more premium products. So maybe those GE products, so the ones sold for the Chinese market would be still manufactured in China, and then the ones, or would they buy those from the U.S.?
No, the most of the products that are going to be sold in China are going to be made in China. And then the high-end products that are brought back into the U.S. are mostly sold in the U.S. and Western Europe. So it's a sort of a global manufacturing strategy, like we were talking about before. It's really an evolutionary step. It's, you know, looking at your the whole world and saying, where should we manufacture to best serve our customers? And as you know, it used to be we just would help people move all of their manufacturing to China and end of story. But these days, it's a much more sophisticated look and a more thoughtful and analytical approach to where in the world you should be manufacturing.
Got it. And we were chatting a little bit before the interview, and how is this going to affect China? Like, I guess you have your views, and there's also China's talked about it openly. So maybe you can give us some ideas.
Yeah. So the Chinese government put out a statement about a year ago regarding reshoring to the U.S. because it was very highly publicized and has been in the U.S. for the past year or so, 2 years maybe, the whole reshoring movement. So the Chinese government put out a statement regarding what they thought about that, and essentially said they didn't think it would affect Chinese manufacturing very much. And I disagree. I think that, you know, this is a very important movement. You know, we're seeing statistics like 54% of all companies over $1 billion in revenue in the U.S. are now reshoring or considering reshoring. So over time, you know, it's going to change the pattern and the landscape of manufacturing around the world. Today, the U.S. economy, about 17% of the U.S. economy is based on manufacturing. In China, it's 80%. So, you know, as some manufacturing is being repositioned around the world, that's going to affect the manufacturing sector in China for sure. Now, that's one thing. So the Chinese government put out a statement saying they didn't think it would have much effect, and I disagree with that. I think it's going to have an effect. But, you know, on the other hand, the Chinese government has their own manufacturing strategies and policies and initiatives underway. For example, the Made in China 2025 initiative, which is to encourage advanced manufacturing within China and to improve the whole manufacturing sector by increasing sophistication and automation and making advanced products inside of China. So, you know, there's a heavy push in China to improve the manufacturing base there as well. And I think, you know, that's indicative of how important the manufacturing sector is to China.
Definitely. I would agree with you for sure. It's they always want to say they've been, I mean, I think maybe in, I kind of remember 2010 when they were just trying to tell all the Chinese citizens to buy China, to be a consumer, that we're going to, you know, be a domestic economy and investing in the local, in domestic rather than investing overseas. So they've been trying to make that focus, but I would kind of agree to any loss in manufacturing is still going to be a hurt to the Chinese economy for sure.
Well, yeah, and you can see that happening. I mean, all the statistics point to the changes that are happening and the metamorphosis that's taking place inside of China from being primarily an export-directed economy based on manufacturing to a consumer economy. And that is a natural progression as companies evolve from an agrarian society into an industrial society. So, you know, you can see the numbers making that happen. It's for sure going to happen. It's sort of a natural progression.
Yep. It'll be fun to watch, I guess, for sure.
Yeah.
Okay. So also, I think a lot of our listeners today are still maybe a little bit smaller business and, are entrepreneurs, SMEs. They might be sitting in here listening, wondering, you know, is this more for GE and Apple, or is there something for the small business too? I mean, I think a lot of them still probably just go to China first. Is there some ideas specifically for smaller businesses? Or
yeah, in fact, I would say the preponderance of what we're seeing right now are smaller companies that are looking to be able to source their products in the U.S. And that's primarily because of the long supply chain that manufacturing in China causes. So, you know, if you can get a product made competitively priced in the U.S., then usually that's the choice. So we're seeing a lot of companies coming to us saying, you know, is there some place that you know of we could manufacture this product or a apparel or footwear or electronics or medical devices. And so we're helping connect those companies together. So yeah, a lot of small manufacturers are doing that too. Definitely coming back to the U.S.
Okay, cool. So hopefully some of those listeners are still with us, because, you know, maybe we'll go through some thought processes of when it makes sense. I know you talked a little bit about maybe the more complicated or expensive manufacturing, but maybe is there some kind of like checklist or action item maybe that to get started?
Yeah, I don't know there's a specific checklist. Certainly the reshoringinstitute.org has a lot of tools and articles and things that, you know, you could look at and evaluate. And we're certainly open to take calls and emails from anybody that's interested. And oftentimes we can hook up people that are looking for a place to manufacture with the current manufacturers. But, you know, we're seeing kind of the revival of a lot of small companies like machine shops and cut and sew organizations, contract manufacturers, smaller contract manufacturers. So not the size of Foxconn, but the local contract manufacturers that can help smaller suppliers. And I think it's really almost a better match. I mean, you have more control. You certainly can oversee the quality in a better way. You know, there's less communication issues. So there are a lot of reasons why a smaller company would prefer to use a U.S. manufacturer. We just have to, you know, put them together. We need to hook them up. And it's not always easy to do that. So, that's part of our mission at the Reshoring Institute, is to help small companies to do just that.
Cool. So I guess it's still technically outsourcing in a way, because it's not most of these companies still are not the actual manufacturer. They're still working with a contract manufacturer that's based in the U.S. Or would they actually take it in-house, do you think? Or
no, I think the vast majority of companies are now using contract manufacturing. You know, because it requires a pretty significant investment in machinery and so forth. So most companies will design a product and then have a contract manufacturer make it. And in fact, that's small companies as well as big companies. Apple, for example, doesn't make anything. They design the product, but they do not make anything. It is all outsourced. So, and you know, that's probably the model that you would see in most cases these days. So even a apparel manufacturer, let's say, somebody in the U.S. makes baby clothes, for example, and you have a small product line, you can get those things made in the U.S. now on a competitive pricing with a small manufacturer than you can with China when you consider the total cost.
Got it.
So I'm not taking a stance that you should never manufacture anything in China. I think there are lots of good reasons and economic possibilities for doing that. And, if your market is also China, then you really have to think that through strategically regarding what to leave in China and, you know, what to potentially manufacture in the U.S.
I guess a lot of times people think manufacturing in China, they think like Alibaba, and that's maybe there's of course some global sources and some others too. But is there something like that in the US where they could find US manufacturers, or is it just Google searching, or is there any tips on how to find these contract manufacturers?
Yeah, we don't have the same kind of Alibaba or sources like that, although there are some. Thomas Register, for example, is a very famous company, a very old company. They used to produce these big green directory sort of. They were books that you subscribed to and got every year. You got a new set of books that had manufacturers listed from all over the place. Well, now they have the same service online, so you can go and check that out. And then there are other companies and exchanges. There's one, for example, that we've partnered with called All American Open Machine Time. And they're a little exchange that takes open machine shop time. So if you have a machine tool, and a lot of these are, you know, specialty tools, and there's a lot of downtime because they don't have enough work to keep the machines busy all the time. So you can register online, and if you need some machining to your product, you can select one of those machine shops that's in your area, and for a bargain price, get the work done that you need to get done. So there are a lot of kind of exchanges like that that seem to be popping up all over the place. So that's sort of interesting too. So yeah, I mean, there isn't exactly a parallel to Alibaba or Global Sources, but there are certainly different ways, and we can help connect people with those kind of sites as well.
Pretty cool. Maybe an opportunity there too.
Yeah.
So thanks so much for your time, Rosemarie. And is there any maybe last tips for somebody before they get started looking for reshoring? Or
yeah, I think, you know, the most important thing is to consider the total cost of ownership. So, you know, when you're looking at comparing prices, although it may appear that China is far less expensive, when you start including the cost of travel, the cost of quality, the cost of inventory in your pipeline, you know, issues like that, then the comparison becomes much better. And we think that in most cases, we can get the cost comparisons within 10 to 15% between the U.S. and China, which is pretty darn close. You know, pretty good.
Yeah, that is pretty amazing.
Yeah. Yeah.
Okay. And then we mentioned your website. So reshoringinstitute.org is the probably the more applicable one. You also have for this specific topic, and then there's your bluesilkconsulting.com.
Yeah. So BlueSilk is my consulting firm, but the Reshoring Institute is where we're doing all the reshoring work. So, and that's a better resource if you're considering manufacturing in the U.S.
Got it. And then how can people reach out to you, check out your website, or is there any other social media or emails? Or
yep, all of the above. So okay. The best way is probably info@reshoringinstitute.org. We're also on LinkedIn. We're on Facebook. It's just Reshoring on Facebook. On Twitter, it's Reshoring Team. So yeah, we have a person dedicated to social media. So we're sort of everywhere.
Awesome. Yeah. Okay. Great. Thanks so much. And I think that helped a lot.
All right. Thanks, Michael. Have a good day.
So thank you everybody for listening. So what'd you think? I'm trying to put some alternative ways instead of China business on the show, keep things neutral here. I've even heard of Chinese factories investing in American factories now. So, you know, I think it's always about staying ahead of the curve. Maybe everybody's talking about manufacturing in China. Maybe you can get ahead of that. Also, I love getting feedback from people. I know some people tell me to be a little bit more confident, a little bit less ums and ahs, and being more direct with the questions of the guest. So I'm working on it as always to try to improve. That's what life's about. And that's a wrap for now. Always send me feedback, mike@globalfromasia.com. Catch you next week. Bye-bye.
To get more info about running an international business via Hong Kong, please visit our website at www.globalfromasia.com. That's www.globalfromasia.com. Also, be sure to subscribe to our iTunes feed. Thanks for tuning in.